Welcome to the Westside Investors Network, WIN, your community of investing knowledge for growth. This is the Real Estate Professionals Investing Podcast for real estate professionals by real estate professionals. This show is focused on the next step in your career, investing. Thank you for listening. And please, if you like our content, rate us on your podcast provider. Just a quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are for educational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any shares or securities, make or consider any investments or take any other action.
Welcome back to another episode of the Deal Deep Dive segment on the Westside Investors Network podcast. I'm your host, Trent Werner. In this segment, our featured guests will share their unique stories on a specific deal they've invested in. We will dive deep into finding the deal, financing the deal, writing an offer, and the due diligence. Do us a solid and smash that subscribe button, leave us a rating, and share this episode. And now, let's dive deep.
Welcome back to the Westside Investors Network podcast. I am your host, Trent Werner. On today's Deal Deep Dive episode, we are joined by Drew Whitson of Enduris Capital. Drew and Enduris Capital are not only a syndication company that has 4,400 plus doors under management and about $400 million in assets, Drew happens to also be a full-time professor at Bethel University in Minnesota. Today, we're going to hear Drew talk about a 224-unit deal in Memphis that him and his company did 5 years ago and are still holding to this day. Now, let's welcome Drew Whitson. All right. Well, Drew Whitson, thank you so much for joining the Deal Deep Dive on the Westside Investors Network podcast today. I'm excited to talk about your current situation with your career as well as your investment, real estate investment side of things. Drew, before we dive into the deal, I definitely want to say thank you again for joining us. And I want to hear a little bit more about how you got into real estate investing as well as being a professor at Bethel University.
Sure. Yeah. So I started getting into real estate investing back in the sort of downturn of the single family home market back in 2009, 2010, 2011. I was one of those guys that started seeing single family homes in my neighborhood start to go into foreclosure. And I started buying them, started picking them up. I would do some renovations and rent them back out and started building just a little portfolio around my neighborhood. I often told people that, you know, the advantage you have as a buyer is to buy what you know. And I didn't know much about real estate, but I knew my neighborhood. I knew what the houses rented for. I knew how they were constructed. So I didn't have a lot of surprises. So that's sort of how I got started in this is getting into the single family home market. From there, I started spending time with other guys in the Minnesota area who were doing the same thing. We started thinking bigger. We started buying up multifamily assets, you know, 3 units, 4 units, 10 and 12, all the way up to 32 units. And then eventually we ran out of money. We couldn't buy anything more, but we still found more deals. And that's kind of how we pivoted into syndication, which is just a legal way to accept investor capital. And from there, we expanded into Minnesota. We've done deals in Ohio, Tennessee, and Kentucky over the last several years. So it's been a very long progression. It's been 15 years since we sort of bought the first single family home to doing the larger multifamily syndication assets. But that's kind of a pretty typical trajectory. People that are moving up in the assets in the real estate investment world.
Yeah, I was going to say there's quite a few people that start with single family and then either run out of money or want to go bigger and have the same progression or similar progression exactly. As you. What a lot of people that are on that trajectory don't have is being a college professor. Yes. Have you been a professor the entire time you've been investing in real estate, or how did that timeline work out?
You know, actually, I would say it's kind of gone the other way around. Before I went into a full-time real estate syndication, I had a corporate finance job. I worked for a local, you know, Fortune 50 company here in the Twin Cities. I did corporate finance for a decade, and I built my real estate business on the side. And so that was something I kind of did at the same time. Once I got my business to a point, my real estate business, where I could sort of say goodbye to my day job, I sort of left and just kind of focused on building more of the real estate. And a thought occurred to me is, if I have enough time and freedom, what is it that I feel like I would want to contribute the most in this world? What is it that I feel like I could have the biggest impact on, regardless of what the income would be? And I was a graduate of Bethel University. I was a finance major here. And so that was one of the things I reached out to my alma mater to said, hey, I've got some great corporate finance experience. I have a great sort of private equity business that I run on the side as well. How can I help? And I ended up coming in and working full time. And it has a tremendous amount of flexibility. I have my summers off, which really allows me to focus on continuing to build my business with my two business partners that are also in here in Minnesota. So I think that's a reflection of a couple of things. One is sort of what is the vision you have for your life when you've been able to achieve certain, certain business objectives, and how do you want to interact with a world that you find interesting and meaningful, regardless of what it pays? And for me, that was sort of where I landed. So I have a full-time position as a professor of finance at Bethel University, and I also am a founder and principal at Enduris Capital, and we syndicate, you know, multiple deals a year through the Midwest.
And like I said, not many people that have gotten into syndication world, you know, end up being professors at a college, especially full time. So I thought that was really interesting and very cool for you to, you know, pass that knowledge and experience that you've obtained over the years back on to the students at Bethel.
Well, one of the fun things I get to do is I really get to spend time with my students, walking them through my deals. Every semester, I take one deal that our company is currently working on, and I provide them little updates and insights every, like, you know, once a week through the whole semester. I show them the underwriting. I show them the contracts. One time I even had the whole class come onto a call with a bank when we bought one of our interest rate caps. And so we called the broker called the bank. We went out to the market. So I had my speakerphone right in class, and the students got to listen on us actually going to Wall Street to buy a derivative. So that's really been fun for me to be able to share that and give them a vision for what the career path could look like, and let them kind of peek under the hood of what private equity looks like. So it really goes both ways. I enjoy the opportunity to provide that to my students and inspire them, hopefully into real estate. And we've actually had quite a few that have spun out from my classes and graduated and gone on into this space, as well as have an opportunity to sort of feel like I'm involved in a meaningful way to help them be successful in the same way that people invested in me when I was a student, that I can look back and point to, here's how some of my success came from those that invested into me a long time ago.
And would you say that, I guess there's probably not a fact out there or data to back this up, but there's probably not very many professors that are able to give the real world, you know, real time examples like you're able to provide for those students?
You know, on a day-to-day basis, you would probably find that more often with like adjuncts at like an MBA school where all of them have day jobs. So I think that's a real valuable to the MBA program, is that you have adjuncts that might have full-time gigs and they're sort of interacting that with their classroom. But on the undergraduate side, there tends to be a little bit less. Most of my peers are career academics, or this is sort of the solo thing that they are able to do.
Absolutely. So now let's talk about the business here. We've talked about your professor, your professing career at Bethel. The business, you have north of 4,400 units, if I'm remembering correctly, right?
Correct. Yep. And that's sort of a combination of the three principals of myself and my other two business partners, sort of what we have as managing member positions. So not passive investments, that's actually assets that we own and control in some form or another.
And assets under management, where's that at?
You know, we've sold a few things, so we're probably right around 400 million or so.
And remind me again, how long have, since you started the actual syndication company?
Our brand Enduris Capital was launched about just a couple years ago, but my two business partners and I had been doing deals together for many years before we formally wrapped a brand around what we were doing. So probably 8 years, I think, is probably kind of when we first started doing the syndication, sort of accepting investor capital. But we had for years been doing our own joint venture deals locally in the Twin Cities, building a portfolio of apartment assets.
Got it. And I know you're in a handful of different states now. Are you still actively looking in the Twin Cities, or are you primarily out of state now?
You know, we do see the advantages of investing locally. We have access, we have more support. Everything tends to run a little bit better when you show up, and it's so much easier to run your assets locally. Yeah. So we do have some assets that we have acquired. We're continuing to build a local network and pipeline of deals. But I would say our primary target outside of Minnesota is going to be, I mean, really kind of the area around Cincinnati. So think of Indianapolis, Lexington, Louisville, Columbus, Ohio, that sort of pocket of the Midwest is really where we've made most of our acquisitions over the last 2 or 3 years.
And I don't want to dive too deep into this question I'm about to ask you, but being from Portland, Oregon, I know that the landlord-tenant laws are somewhat similar here and there. Has that played any factor impact on your decisions to go outside of Minnesota?
A little bit, right? I think you generally think of the friendliness, the landlord tenant sort of friendliness, as being a general tailwind to deals, right? So we generally want to find opportunities in states and counties that are more landlord friendly. But here's the thing. People in real estate can make money no matter the situation, right? So you can have very tenant friendly deals, but if you figure a way to operate that, there's people that are making money in those. Where we've seen the biggest impact of that has been in the Minneapolis and especially the St. Paul area, where they have dropped on some landlord restrictions. It's some of the most strict rent control restrictions in the country is in St. Paul. And that has really hurt those assets. The development has pulled out, and all of the things that they had been hoping to achieve by putting rent controls, I think, are backfired. So there's quite a bit of backpedaling in St. Paul because there's simply no one willing to invest capital into those markets when they have such strict caps on the ability to raise rents, even in a scenario where you're putting a lot of your own money forward to renovate the asset. So in the direct St. Paul area, we're really staying out of there. If you think of the Twin Cities, we're kind of in the outer ring suburbs is really where we're seeing most of our acquisitions. But rent control is like cancer. It sort of spreads slowly. And so we know that that is something we have to consider as we assess the risk of the local investments.
Yeah, the reason I brought that up is because I saw an article the other day talking about the strictest landlord-tenant laws, and Minneapolis popped up, or St. Paul popped up, one of the two. And it seemed very similar to what we deal with here locally. Sure. And we're experiencing a lot of the same stuff that you just talked about. You know, it's kind of backfiring, and we're seeing a lot of development, less out-of-state money coming in. So we'll see how it plays out over the next handful of years. But I appreciate you answering that question.
Yeah.
Drew, let's talk about the deal at hand today. I believe it's in Memphis. And
correct.
Memphis, and it was 244 units?
224, yep.
224 in Memphis. What was the acquisition price on that, you remember?
We bought it for about $8.6 million. It was $39,000 per unit.
Okay. And what was the plan going into it? What made you guys want to buy that deal?
Yeah, so the genesis of this deal actually got to start one deal up. Myself and my business partner at the time, he lived in Seattle, and neither one of us lived in Memphis, right? I was still in Minnesota. We thought Memphis was a great market, landlord-friendly, big housing development, right? They were very eager to have investors come in to revitalize an old housing stock. But before we bring investors into any market, we always like to generally invest ourselves to make sure we kind of understand how to run things remotely, make sure we have the right partnerships. So my business partner and I, just the two of us, had 1031'd a couple of transactions in Minnesota into a single deal in Memphis. It was a 68 unit. And so we had been to Memphis many times before we bought that. We purchased that asset, and we would go regularly visit the property and the property manager just to kind of understand sort of the ins and outs. We made some mistakes. We fired a property manager. We hired the right one, right? So we really learned how to remotely manage this asset. While we were in town, right, we came in just to sit down across the way from brokers and just kind of press and flesh with the property manager to build that relationship. We were asking them, we said, look, we've got the 68 unit. We love Memphis. It's doing a great job. What other things are you working on? Are you aware of any other deals? And our property manager sort of leaned back in his chair and kind of said, well, if you guys think you can raise some money, we do have a deal that we're working on for another client, but they just backed out of it. And it was this 224 unit deal. And at the time he had said, well, if you guys think you could raise $3 million of cash, you know, we'd love to, you know, work with you to acquire this thing, because our property manager had already completed all of the due diligence. They had done 100% of the walkthroughs. They had built out the budget. And so they really kind of had a deal sort of set to go. And this was, you know, 4 years ago. And my buddy and I had never raised anything near $3 million, but we sort of just, you know, confidently just shook our heads and say, oh, sure, we could raise that, right? Deep down, no, not having any idea where we'd find $3 million.
And now here's a word from our sponsor.
Get things done while you're on the move. Learn more about working with a virtual assistant through Offsite Professionals. It's a great way to get all the things done that you need to get done. Have freedom in your time and streamline your life by automating your business. Stop spending time on the tasks that you can delegate and start spending more time on your superpower. Call us today at 503-446-3177 or visit our website at offsiteprofessionals.com.
Uptown Syndication is now offering a syndication coaching program for you to take your real estate portfolio to the next level. This is your opportunity to have experienced syndicators, AJ and Chris Shepard, coach you on your way to controlling your real estate investing future. Our coaching program will provide you with the tools and framework needed to begin syndicating real estate in your target market. Go to uptownsyndication.com today to learn more.
But we ended up, you know, because we knew that was the raise. That was how much of equity we needed, because even the debt had been baked in. So that was kind of the first start to this process of trying to do a large multifamily acquisition in Memphis outside of, you know, bringing in outside investors. So that was kind of how they just kind of dropped this thing in our lap. So that was kind of how we found out about the deal.
And when you were, I kind of want to step back, because I think that's really interesting how you invest personally, you and your partner invested personally prior to, you know, bringing the syndication company there and investing in the deal we're talking about. When you're doing that process, obviously you're trying to find the right property manager that you can then, you know, continue that relationship with on the next one. Is there anything else that you're looking for when you're going through that kind of recon phase that you're talking about?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. We actually spend a lot of time working backwards into outstate markets, right? And one of the things that we like to start with is our property manager, right? Because your property, everyone involved in your transaction is transactional except the property manager, right? The broker gets paid when the funds are exchanged. There's a title company, there's, right, all these third-party services that provide you the transaction. Even your attorney isn't invested in the long-term success of that asset, right? They're transactional. Your property manager is the one group that if they tell you things during the due diligence process, they have to stick with that while you own it, right? So you tend to get, I think, the most honest, best assessment from property managers. And we like to say, tell us about what you own in your current portfolio and tell us where you think we should be investing in the city. What are the assets and the locations that you think are the best that already augment where you have existing operations throughout the city? And working backwards with them to say, if you're our long-term partner, let's figure out if we work together and what can I buy that helps you build, grow your business? And so that was part of that strategy, was saying, let's work backwards from a property manager and then acquire assets. Most of the time you hear, well, you put a property under contract and then you go find a property manager, right? Whether that's a good fit. And I've fired enough property managers in my day that I know that it's better to start out with the right partner up front. So when you hit the ground, you already know a lot of those questions are answered and they're going to be your partner in the long run for this asset.
You know, I absolutely love that, because I've heard, you know, just from conversations on this show, I've heard plenty of stories about, you know, bad property manager right when we acquired it, and that delayed things a year, 2 years, or sometimes even sunk a deal because of not the right fit or they weren't doing their job correctly. So the fact that you do that beforehand, I think, is very brilliant. And I mean, when we get to other markets, I think that's a great process to borrow from you, Drew.
Absolutely.
So you found the deal through your property manager. Obviously, you connected with the right person or the right company that's going to manage it for the long run. Was there any value add component, or what were the metrics in terms of how are you going to increase this value of the property that you just purchased?
Yeah, one of the advantages of this transaction was that the seller was a private equity group out of New York that had bought this out of foreclosure. And so for them, it was a short dated ownership and they were compensated based upon an IRR. And if you have an IRR calculation, right, if your compensation is based on IRR and it's a short ownership, literally every week that it takes to close it costs them money, right? Because they get paid a little bit less because your IRR will go down each day that it doesn't close. So for them, they offered us an absolutely incredible deal. Properties similar to this were trading at $50,000 to $55,000 per unit. They offered it to us at $39,000, but they said, here's the deal. There's absolutely no negotiating. This is the price we're selling you at. This is the condition we're going to give you for credits. And when we again try to negotiate some of these things, and this is the day you have to close, right? And so if you can accept these things, we're willing to leave some meat on the bone and allow you to buy this at what we think is a sub market price in order to get this done quickly and efficiently. They didn't want things pushed out. And they also, and so that was one part of it, is we wanted to make the purchase correctly. We wanted to make some money in the buy. We also wanted to make some money in the value add. All of these units, this was a property that was built in the early 80s. And so everything kind of needed a little bit of refreshing. So we built out a capital budget to go through and renovate these assets and bring rents up several hundred dollars. So we had budgeted back then $8,000 to $10,000 And that would have bought us $200, $250 per unit rent increases. So that was really our two-prong approach, was buy it right and then have a value add strategy that allowed us to increase rents to get it to a more stabilized position.
Are you still holding this property today?
We are. Yep. When we bought it, it'll be 5 years in May. And we've had quite a bit of things that have happened since then, which I thought might make this an interesting deep dive.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the reason I ask that is because what you're talking about, the value add, the cosmetic refreshing, how many units have you guys updated since you bought it 5 years ago?
You know? I think we have, it's probably at least 95% of them. Some of them were in various states. So we have a couple of tenants that haven't left, right? And as long as those tenants are willing to renew their leases at market rates and they're perfectly happy with their appliances and carpet and paint, we're happy to leave them. We're not trying to kick anyone out to do that. So most of those have been renovated and we've really been able to achieve rents that are almost double our target, right? So we went from averaging maybe $600 per unit to we're averaging a little over 1,000 now. So we've continued to be able to move those rents as the market has matured over the last 5 years.
And so 95% of these units have been renovated, give or take. Was that your plan going into it, to renovate as many units as possible?
Correct. Yeah, renovate as many units as possible. Go into, we used a bridge lender with some capital improvement funding. We got it to the point where we could refinance without putting in any cash. And we did this, boy, this was about 2 years ago last fall. And so we took our original debt. We rolled up all of the original debt plus the capital improvements, and we locked into a 7-year interest only loan with Fannie at 2.85%. So we have 7 years at 2.85, and it's really been one of our stronger cash flowing deals. It's our mortgage payment with our initial refinance was maybe 10% of our revenue, right? So it was very minimal debt load on the asset, and we could return a lot of capital to investors quite regularly.
Well, and that leads me to my next question is the returns that you forecasted for the investors. Obviously, it sounds like you're hitting or overachieving your projections.
Yep.
When you're operating a deal like this, do you have, you know, certain preferred returns with waterfalls, or how do you guys operate?
Yeah. You know, some of our more recent deals, we've been able to do that with some of the larger assets. We will do probably sometimes 2 shares. We'll have a very small preferred shared class. We have some investors that just want to be at the top of the capital stack and are happy sort of taking a coupon clipper. For this deal, we only had 1 share class. We just had 1 share class for about $3 million. There was no hurdles on this one. We have done a couple of hurdles on some of our larger value add transactions, where if we really just blow it out of the water, there's a little extra carrot for us at the end. But most of them aren't terribly complicated. One of the things that we don't want to confuse our investors. We want to make it a very simple transaction. We want to make it simple to understand. We want to make it simple to track and simple to explain, right? If you have to create too many things that are too complicated, investors will, if they're not sure what's happening or where they fit in, they're going to say no, right? So for our ability just to communicate it, for our ability to sort of just track and ongoing, just manage it, we try to keep things as simple as we can. And I know these days it's pretty complicated. People put in all sorts of share classes and waterfalls and hurdles, and the capital stack just gets to be a mess. But for this transaction, we really just try to keep things as simple as possible.
And obviously, you've been able to return some of the initial capital to investors. It sounds like, what is the target hold time for a deal like this? I mean, after doing that refinance and being able to kind of pull out what you could, did that change anything? And did it differ from your initial projected hold time?
Yeah, I think anytime you have an opportunity to return capital to your investors, so to sort of fill in the details here, right? 2.5 years ago, we did the refinance into our 7-year interest-only loan. Just in the last 2 or 3 months, we actually added a supplemental loan onto that original loan. So Fannie does allow you to do a supplemental loan. So it's like a second note, but it's sort of coterminous and in alignment with the original debt. And we were able to do a supplemental loan for the $3 million. So in addition to the cash flow we've been able to distribute to our investors, we were able to actually return all of our original capital and original investment right around Christmas time to our investors this year. We've got it, and our blended rate's still pretty decent for the asset. It still cash flows really well. But to be able to do a full member capital return on an asset these days, we were pretty proud of that.
Yeah, Absolutely. And so I guess, do you just plan on holding it for the foreseeable future?
Yes, we do. Yep. Once you get into these agency loans, unless someone is willing to sort of assume this debt, you're pretty locked into it. Given the amount of investment that we had, given the commitment from our property manager, we're pretty happy to let this thing cash flow. We don't have as many transactions as we did a couple of years ago. So our investors have generally told us, as long as I can continue to maintain my ownership and you can continue to do distributions, it makes sense for us just to keep holding this asset and continuing to return more capital to our investors over the next several years.
Would you say, I mean, it sounds like you kind of went through that growth phase a handful of years ago, and now you're kind of at the stabilized and just reap the rewards type phase?
For our older assets, yes, right? Things that we bought in 2022 that we're still working pretty hard every day, right? So we have some exposure that we're working through, and we've been able to work through most of those successfully so far. But yeah, we have a portfolio that ranges in things that we've owned for, you know, 10 years to, you know, less than 9 months. So yeah, there's different certain phases and components of our portfolio that are experiencing different levels of growth or stability, or we're working through some refinancing of existing variable debt into some fixed products. So it's never a dull day. We're always chasing something. But yeah, we certainly have pockets of our portfolio that simply are out of sight, out of mind, and we can just make our quarterly distributions and monthly updates.
Awesome. And then I guess last question I have for you is, are you going to continue to, you know, be aggressive with acquiring more assets, or what are you looking for? And they, you know, what's going to allow you to pull the trigger on new deals right now after this market has shifted over the last couple of years?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that you've seen most indicators really pivot towards is deals that cash flow right out of the gate, right? So assets that are not simply acquired based upon their potential, they're assets that can be put on with, you know, low leverage fixed debt that can support themselves right out of the gate, right? So I think we're certainly interested in continuing to find stabilized assets in good locations. One of the things you can't change, right? You can change everything about a property except its location, right? I can put money can do anything except change where it's located. So I think the core of our investment thesis is, where are the best located assets? What are the best markets? And then we work backwards into, what are the kind of assets that could be benefited by having light refreshes, right? Sort of not major renovations, but assets that have an opportunity to have some just value add improvement if given enough time and recapitalization of some of these properties.
Awesome. And Drew, is there anywhere people can find more about you and your company, connect with you more?
Yeah, feel free to go to our website, EnduriceCapital.com, E-N-D-U-R-U-S, so EnduriceCapital.com. You can check out our portfolio, look at our bios, our email, feel free to reach out to our investor relations team. You can reach out to me, Drew@EnduriceCapital.com. We'd love to connect with you. If you're in some of those markets or interested in investing in these kinds of things, please let us know.
Awesome. Well, I hope I didn't miss anything today, Drew. Again, I appreciate you coming on and sharing about your Memphis deal. And I'm excited to see where you guys take it this year.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Trent.
Thanks, Drew.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Real Estate Professionals Investing Podcast on WIN, your community of investing knowledge for growth. We hope that this episode has increased your knowledge and added value to your path to freedom. If you would, please take a second to rate us so that we can get more great investors to interview. If you or someone that you know wants to be on, please visit westsideinvestors.com and fill out our form to be on the show. Thank you again and enjoy your day.